RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can also listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz, and 11785 kHz.
Listener of RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, wherever you are, welcome to our English Bulletin program. In today's edition, we present you the news. News from across the country, today in history, highlight of the week, and news in brief. We will continue our program with Indonesian Wonder and Miscellany. Then we will end our program with Listener's Mailbag. That's our program for today, listener. And now let's stand by with the news.
Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Listener, welcome back to Newsline. First, the headlines. The 70th session of the United Nations General Assembly ends. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno LP Marsudi stresses the importance of a political approach to resolve conflict in Syria. Now the news in detail. The 70th session of the United Nations General Assembly theme A Road Ahead for Peace, Security and Human Rights ended on Saturday in New York time. President of General Assembly Morgan Liketoft said the 9-day general debate had gathered the highest number of heads of states and government than ever before to discuss challenges and opportunities relating to global peace, security, development, and human rights. While celebrating the organization's 70th anniversary, those leaders had reaffirmed the spirit and principles of the Charter and confirmed their faith in the central role of the United Nations in international cooperation. He said speakers had repeatedly stressed the need for a global response rooted in the international law and solidarity to the crisis of refugees, displaced persons, and migrants across the world. While the radical actions of ISIS, Boko Haram, and other extremist groups were unanimously denounced and rejected as an affront to the common humanity.
This year, we saw the highest number of heads of state and government ever gathered here to discuss challenges and opportunities relating to global peace, security, development, and human rights. And as we commemorate the 70th anniversary, it was fitting and reassuring that leaders recalled and reaffirmed the spirit and the principles of the Charter and confirmed their faith in the central role of UN in international cooperation.
He further said that he would when attend the World Bank Group and International Monetary Fund annual meeting of the finance ministers in Peru on October 9th, highlighting financing needs to implement the new Sustainable Development Goals and respond to the ongoing humanitarian crisis. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno LP Marsudi met with United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon at the United Nations headquarters, New York, on Friday, October 2, 2015. During the meeting, the minister stressed the importance of a political approach to resolve the conflict in Syria. Meanwhile, the United Nations Secretary General sees the complexity of the situation on the ground. There are 5 countries that have a major role, namely the United States, Russia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. Settling conflicts in Syria will not be separated from political dialogue of the 5 countries. Retno added that the Secretary General monitors the position of Indonesia and gives an appreciation on a balancing role between the 2 great powers.
Tentunya penyelesaian di Syria tidak akan bisa lepas dari dialog politik dari 5 negara.
Settlement in Syria surely will not be separated from political dialogue of the 5 countries. The Secretary General clearly observes and appreciates the position that has been taken by Indonesia in strict balance between the hard and soft power. In addition to the contribution in maintaining the world's peace, the United Nations chief also recognizes the role of Indonesia in accommodating refugees in May. He hopes Indonesia can implement the SDGs program, that is adoption of 2015-2030 Sustainable Program. The delegates of the Solomon Islands at the United Nations headquarters on Saturday, New York time, noted that all countries have legal responsibility to uphold human rights and to take measures against human rights violations. The Solomon Islands expressed its willingness to cooperate with Indonesia on violations in Papua and West Papua. The country is also ready to work and hold a dialogue with Indonesia in a multilateral system through the Human Rights Council.
On the issue of human rights violations on Papua and West Papua, we have made it clear that we would like to work with Indonesia. We would like to work with everyone within the United Nations Human Rights Commission, that all states have a legal duty and moral responsibility to uphold, respect and promote human rights, and where necessary, take preventive, protective and punitive measures against human rights abuses and violations.
Meanwhile, Indonesia's representative, Nona Geluna, said she rejected references to the so-called human rights issue in West Papua as dangerously misleading. She said no country, either big or small, developed or least developed, was free from human rights problems, and Indonesia was no exception. However, as a major nation and the fourth reviewed largest democracy in the world, Indonesia had a robust national human rights protection system and continued to strengthen its related institutions and legislations.
The two provinces enjoy wide-ranging autonomy, guaranteed by national laws, including in the election of governors. The government continues to do its utmost to be accountable to the peoples of Papua and West Papua, including in the areas of human rights. The government of Indonesia attaches great importance to its relations with Pacific Island countries, as some peoples of Indonesia have strong commonalities with peoples of the Pacific Island region.
In addition, Indonesia, as the fourth largest democracy country in the world, had the most detailed provisions on human rights in the constitution. In fact, Indonesia has a national commission to investigate human rights violations. The Indonesian government will set up Indonesian language teaching at schools in Papua New Guinea to show the harmonious relation between the two countries. It was revealed in the bilateral meeting between Indonesian Minister of Foreign Affairs Retno LP Marsudi and Papua New Guinea Foreign Minister Rimbing Pato in New York. Regarding the teaching of Indonesian language, PNG or Papua New Guinea Foreign Minister permits to give the name of the school to be the pilot project.
Hubungan kita dengan PNG dalam situasi yang sangat baik dan dalam waktu yang tidak terlalu lama, kita juga akan melakukan.
Our relationship with Papua New Guinea is in a good condition. In a not very long time, we also hold a bilateral consultation with Papua New Guinea. We are trying to establish the Indonesian teaching language at schools in Papua New Guinea. Earlier, I have asked whether the country has decided which schools to be designed as a pilot project. On the occasion, Indonesia also expressed its gratitude related to cooperation in Papua New Guinea authority to release two Indonesian hostages some time ago. Retno hoped the authority can transparently process the perpetrators. In addition to Papua New Guinea, the Indonesian foreign ministers in the end of her working visit to New York also had bilateral meetings with Foreign Minister of Oman, Yusuf bin Alawi. The last item, the economy of Central Java and Yogyakarta is predicted to grow 5.3% in the last two quarters of this year. In the last two quarters, we predict the economy of the two regions would grow as reflected in the leading sector in the gross domestic product, or GDP. Head of the representative of Bank Indonesia for Central Java and Yogyakarta, Iskandar Simorangkir, said at a media gathering in Yogyakarta on Saturday. Iskandar added the rise in cement consumption indicated the government program in infrastructure development begins to roll, as also was reflected by a significant increase in budget spending. Other indicators, he said, include growing sales of motor vehicles and imports of capital goods, such as industrial machines. Therefore, Iskandar said the economy of Central Java and Yogyakarta is expected to grow 5.3% in the third quarter and 5.34% in the last quarter of this year. He predicted the country's economy will grow in the range of 4.7% to 5.1% or 4.9% this year. To end the news, here are the headlines once again. The 70th session of United Nations General Assembly ends. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno LP Marsudi stresses the importance of a political approach to resolve conflict in Syria. Well, listener, that was the news from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Hello, listener of RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia. Welcome back with me, Rahma, in our weekly segment, News from Across the Country, which presents you various interesting events from across the country during the week. Listener, the first news comes from Putri Gayatri, a teenager from West Java, who took part in a series of activities in the United Nations General Assembly in New York on September 23rd to the 28th. Putri, the 15-year-old student of SMA Negeri 81 State Senior High School in Banjaran, Soreang, was invited along with 20 other students from 20 countries in the world. She represented Indonesia to discuss and deliver her experience as a teenager who is encouraged to make social changes. As reported by Kompas Daily, along with the winner of Peace Nobel, Malala Yousafzai, Putri who comes from Kampung Sepen, Sukasari Village, Pamengpek District, West Java, attended the opening of Post-2015 Sustainable Development Agenda Summit in the UN headquarters. Putri is concerned about children with special needs that her previous school, SMP Negeri 1 State Junior High School in Pamengpek, Bandung, West Java, can accept them to study there. In coincidence, at that time, Bandung Region, West Java, Dadang Nasser finally supported it and asked schools in the area to accept children with special needs. In her house and at school, Putri is known to be active in campaigning prevention of early marriage that is often experienced by her friends. Moving on to information from West Sumatra Province, Agam Regency Marine and Fisheries Service, West Sumatra, where 850 eggs of turtles hatched in Gasan Ketek, Nagari Tiku Selatan, Tanjung Mutiara District, to preserve the sea animal. Head of Agam Regency Marine and Fisheries Service, Ermanto, said in Lubung Basung last Friday, the hatching of turtle eggs has been done since 3 months ago in Kelompok Gasta Jaya. According to him, out of 850 turtle eggs, 200 eggs have hatched and have been released to Tiku waters. He added that the hatching of these turtle eggs is done naturally by keeping the eggs in the 50-centimeter sand. The location is protected by fish-catching tool, net, to keep baby turtles. The hatching of the turtle eggs, Ermanto added, aims to preserve turtles which are getting extinct in Tiku waters. Agam Regency Marine and Fisheries Service will try to make turtles breeding in Tiku, Tanjung Mutiara District. The last information is about Batik Day commemoration on October 2nd. To show love for Batik, running lovers community Indorunner ran around the city of Madiun, East Java. By wearing Batik attributes like clothes, shorts, blangkon or Javanese men's cap, t-shirt, scarf and many others, around 35 runners of Indorunners Madiun celebrated National Batik Day on Thursday night on October 1, 2015. Coordinator of Indorunner Madiun, Kodar Muntaha, said, "The batik attributes show love for batik, which is recognized by UNESCO as masterpiece of the oral and intangible heritage of humanity." According to Taha, it is not the first time for Indorunner to run by wearing batik. Taha added that at least after batik is set as masterpiece of the oral and intangible heritage of humanity by UNESCO in 2009, the young generation is no longer shy to wear batik. Well, listeners, that ends news from across the country from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. I'm Rahman, thanks for listening.
Today in history, a compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
This is RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Today in History, a regular segment which brings back people and events from this date in the past as recorded in history. Let's begin with World Animal Day, which falls on October the 4th. World Animal Day is an international day of action for animal rights and welfare, celebrated annually on October the 4th, the feast day of Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals. It started in 1931 at a convention of ecologists in Florence, Italy, who wished to highlight the plight of endangered species. World Animal Day has since expanded its focus from its original intent, which was to bring attention to endangered or threatened species. The day is now set aside as a time to reflect on all of the species or animals that we share this world with and our involvement with them, and spur action to commemorate that respectful relationship. Next is an event from October the 4th, 1967. Omar Ali Saifuddin III of Brunei Darussalam abdicates in favor of his son, His Majesty Sultan Hassan al-Bolkiah. Omar Ali Saifuddin III, who was born on September the 23rd, 1914, and died on September the 7th, 1986, was the 28th Sultan of Brunei, who ruled from June the 4th, 1950, until his abdication from the throne on October the 4th, 1967. Upon the death of his brother, who left no male heirs, on June the 4th, 1950, Sultan Omar Ali Saifuddin III was proclaimed as the 28th Sultan of Brunei on June the 6th, 1950. He also became the head of the Islamic religion in the country. His influence over religion guaranteed the continued beliefs and practices of Islam among the people. After ruling for 17 years on October the 4th, 1967, Sultan Omar Ali Saifuddin willingly abdicated in favor of his elder son, Sultan Haji Hassan al-Bolkiah. At the time of the announcement, the Crown Prince was in England training as a cadet at the Royal Military Academy in Sandhurst. The Prince returned immediately to Brunei. Last is from 2004, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono and Yusuf Kalla are announced as the winner of Indonesia's presidential and vice presidential election. The first direct presidential election in Indonesia was held in two rounds on July the 5th and September the 20th, 2004. The incumbent president Megawati Soekarnoputri was elected into office in 2001 after the legislature impeached and removed the predecessor President Abdurrahman Wahid, often known as Gus Dur, from office. Megawati's re-election bid was challenged by four candidates, including incumbent Vice President Hamzah Has. In the first round, former cabinet member and retired General Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono received a plurality of the valid ballot submitted, followed by Megawati. Yudhoyono eventually defeated Megawati with 60.62% in the valid ballots in the second round, and he was inaugurated as the sixth president of Indonesia on October the 20th, 2004. Well, that was Today in History. Over Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, I'm Anna Trijayakasih.
Today in History, a compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
The Week Spotlight presents Top Issue of the Week.
Listener, this is highlight of the week from RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia with Mirahma, entitled Indonesia Chooses China for Jakarta-Bandung Railway Project. Listener, having been through a long debate in several months, the Indonesian government finally chooses China rather than Japan to run Jakarta-Bandung high-speed railway project with business-to-business model. President Joko Widodo prefers proposal from China because project proposal from China is not considered burdensome. China also promises bigger technology than Japan. China is willing to take project without guarantee from the state budget. Minister of the National Development Planning, or BAPENAS Chairman Sofian Jalil, said Japanese private parties cannot be involved in business-to-business cooperation scheme because it is not suitable with business model and regulation of the Japanese government. Sofian Jalil made the statement after meeting Japanese authorities in Tokyo. However, Indonesia has decided that the tens of trillion rupiah business can be done through business-to-business scheme without budget guarantee or capital from Indonesia. After Indonesia chooses China in Jakarta-Bandung High-Speed Railway Project, Head of Japanese Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga said infrastructure projects should be done in a fair and transparent way, considering their appropriateness. Suga admitted that he regrets the decision taken by the Indonesian government. He doubts the worthiness of Chinese proposal to build high-speed train without funding from the Indonesian government. The high-speed railway project is predicted to reach 78 trillion rupiah, or about 635.8 billion yen, or about 4.3 billion US dollar. Meanwhile, Presidential Chief of Staff Teten Mas Duki stated the Indonesian government is really open with investment that can boost economy in the country. Therefore, according to Teten Mas Duki, Japan still gets a chance to invest in railway infrastructure projects in Java, like Jakarta-Surabaya project, as well as those in Kalimantan and Sulawesi. Besides train, there will be port and highway infrastructure construction. Well, listeners, that ends highlight of the week from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Listener, here is Week in Review, presenting several important events happened this week, so stay tuned. We start on Monday, September 28, 2015. President Joko Widodo said on Sunday, September 27, that he monitored the handling of Indonesian Hajj victims of the recent stampede in Mina, Saudi Arabia. He said he has kept monitoring it through the Religious Affairs Minister that the government had sent as the chief of the Indonesian pilgrims there. The president said, with regard to the pilgrims that are still unaccounted for, the pilgrimage team would continue seeking them, and until now, they still collected the data. He said, the Indonesian government will not as yet file a protest with regard to the incident, pending the conclusion of the investigation by the Saudi government, as priority is given to ensure the whereabouts of the pilgrims that are still unaccounted for and their safety. Still on Monday, Bareskrim, the National Police Criminal Investigation Agency, has named 204 individuals and corporations as suspects in illegal land burning operations in Kalimantan and Sumatra. Hundreds of reports made to the police have resulted in 195 individuals and 9 corporations being named suspects. National Police Chief of the Detectives Commissioner General Anang Iskandar said on Sunday, September 27th, he told the Jakarta Globe that 68 individuals and 5 executives from corporations have been detained by the police. Previously, the Ministry of Environment ordered 4 companies to suspend operations after allegedly causing forest fires that sent smoke across the swath of Southeast Asia. The move was part of nationwide investigation against more than 200 companies as authorities scrambled to bring the fires on Sumatra and Kalimantan Islands under control by the end of November, amid complaints from neighboring Singapore and Malaysia. Government officials say their previous efforts to reduce the seasonal slash and burn practices have failed due to a lack of policy coordination and legal wrangling that could take years to resolve. On Tuesday, September 29, 2015, the Indonesian government on Tuesday announced the second economic package, which contained new policies to accelerate domestic investment in a bid to boost the economy while the rupiah plummets. One of the new policies is a stimulus package to quicken the process of obtaining industrial park investment permits from a few days to a matter of hours. It was stated by the Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs, Darmin Nasution, in the press conference on Tuesday. BKPM head Frankie Sibarani said the license could be issued in 3 hours, including the principal permit, the approval of business entity's name, and the tax identification number or NPWP issuance. Finance Minister Bambang Brojonegoro said another economic policy was designed to bring in foreign exchange earnings from exports, or DHE, by designing it to giving tax discounts for all DHE kept in local banks. If the DHE is kept in month-long US dollar time deposit, he continued, the tax will be slashed from the previous 20% to only 10%. Still on Tuesday, Indonesia hopes its return to OPEC in December will bring Asia's top gasoline importer closer to the world's main oil producers and ease its reliance on a small group of traders for supplies, the country's
Energy Minister told Reuters on Monday. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries is expected to approve Indonesia's request to reactivate its full membership at the group's next meeting on December the 4th, making the Southeast Asian country the group's only net crude oil importer. Indonesia was the only Asian OPEC member for nearly 50 years before leaving the group at the start of 2009, just after oil prices had hit record high, and with rising domestic demand and falling production having turned it into a net oil buyer. Energy Minister Sudirman Said said he believed the decision to suspend its membership allowed some people to take advantage of Indonesia being cut off from the top oil producers. Indonesia hopes reactivating its OPEC membership will help enhancing relationship with top oil producers, potentially leading to long-term oil supply agreement and much-needed investment in the country's energy infrastructure. An OPEC source said the rules on new members were relaxed in the case of Indonesia as it never officially left the group. On Wednesday, September 30, 2015, determined to draw more investment, the government cuts the time to wrap up licensing procedure only a few hours from days normally. It was stated by the Chief of Economic Minister Darmin Nasution said when announcing details of economic policy package at the presidential office on Tuesday. Darmin said there are two types of investment license, one for investment in industrial estates and another for investment outside industrial estates. Under the old regulation, licensing procedure for investment outside industrial estate could take up to 8 days. Head of Investment Coordinating Board or BKPM Frankie Sebarani said prospective investors will need only 3 hours to obtain investment license from the agency. The investment is at least 100 billion rupiah or provides at least 1,000 jobs for Indonesians. He said, President has also assigned BKPM and related ministries to simplify the licensing procedure for investment in industries potential to be the country's economic backbone. The new economic policy package is the second part announced by the government after one earlier this month. Still on Wednesday, the Indonesian government needs to provide more land and expand coffee plantations in order to be able to achieve its target of surpassing Brazil as the world's largest coffee supplier. It was stated by the Union of Indonesian Coffee Exporters Association, or GAIKI, as quoted by the Jakarta Post on Tuesday. GAIKI Secretary General Is Darmawan Asrikan said the government needed to provide more land to grow coffee and intensify production if it wanted to beat Brazil, which produces around 2.7 million tons of coffee beans and exports over 1.8 million tons in a year. The Trade Ministry's Director General for National Export Development, Nusnuzuri Ashak, said the government aimed to make the country's largest coffee supplier in the world, particularly its well-known specialty coffees. She said, Indonesia must become the world's first-ranked coffee supplier. Indonesia, which produces between 650,000 to 750,000 tons of coffee beans a year, is currently the fourth largest coffee producer after Brazil, Vietnam and Colombia, according to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. On Thursday, October 1st, 2015, Indonesian government declared October 1st as the International Coffee Day. Declaration was implemented by the Ministry of Industry, the Coordinating Ministry of Economic Affairs, Ministry of Agriculture, and Ministry of Trade in cooperation with relevant associations. This was stated by the Minister of Industry, Salih Hussein, after the launching of the International Coffee Day in Jakarta on Thursday. He said that this effort is carried out aimed at celebrating the coffee culture that is rooted in Indonesian society. The effort is also undertaken to increase the coffee productivity and quality, as well as to promote natural coffee consumption. Minister Salih Hussein added, it is also expected to increase the export value of Indonesia's coffee products to international market that will improve the welfare and value chain of Indonesian coffee, Indonesia among the farmers, industries, and coffee retail services. Currently, according to Minister Saleh, Indonesia's coffee production is approximately 700 tons per year, far below Brazil amounted to 2,000 tons per year, and Vietnam with 1,500 tons per year. Listener, we are still on Thursday. Indonesian Marine and Fisheries Minister Susi Pujastuti said the government is drafting a presidential regulation on illegal, unreported, and unregulated, or IUU, fishing, expected to be issued shortly. Hopefully, before President Joko Widodo's visit to United States, Indonesia would have a presidential regulation on IUU fishing. President Joko Widodo is to visit the United States to meet with President Barack Obama on the last week of October 2015. The presidential regulation would give greater authority to the IUU Fishing Task Force formed by the Marine and Fisheries Minister. Minister Susi also said the task force would have the authority in cooperation with the other forces like Navy and the Sea Security Agency or Bakamla to take action against IUU fishing perpetrators. For that purpose, the Navy should be given more large ships to deal with illegal fishing in Indonesian waters. Now to the last day, which is Friday, October 2, 2015. President Joko Widodo or Jokowi at a meeting of the Economic Regulation Program on Thursday asked all related ministries to reduce the prices of fuels such as premium and diesel oil. He asked state-owned oil company Pertamina to recalculate whether it is possible to reduce the price of premium oil. The Economic Regulation Program meeting discussed a variety of steps being taken to improve the economic condition in the country. The president also urged the bank to can lower the interest rates by implementing measures to enhance efficiency. During the meeting, Jokowi asked the ministries to improve their labor-intensive sectors to increase people's purchasing power. The president said the Public Works Ministry and the Agricultural Ministry should take up construction of water irrigation network in some areas. He also requested Home Affairs Minister Cahyo Kumolo to utilize the Village Development Fund to support labor-intensive projects. Also, the president asked for restructuring of the micro, small, and medium enterprises. Still on Friday, listener. Ministry of Religious Affairs reissued the plan of completing the identity bracelet of Hajj pilgrims with Global Positioning System, or GPS. The application of GPS bracelet aimed to facilitate the officers to search for the pilgrims who are lost. Minister of Religious Affairs Lukman Hakim Saifuddin stated that there needs a breakthrough to overcome the problem of pilgrims who often are confused in finding their lodging during the pilgrimage. The minister told the press recently, Lukman stated, "The idea to embed GPS in pilgrim identity bracelet was not a new idea. This idea will be applied in this year's Hajj season, but there was not enough time. Cases of pilgrims who were confused to find their lodgings often happen to those who live near the Masjidil Haram. There was no bus services, so they have to walk. Other way, there were pilgrims who sometimes walked to other directions. The cases increased after throwing Jumrah at Jamarat Mina on the 10th Zulhijjah. There were many exits, which made the pilgrims difficult to find their way back. According to Lukman, Mina incident could be overcome by improving facilities. Tents in Mina should be refilled so that the pilgrims do not need to be placed in Wadi Muhasir or Mina Jadid." Well, listener, that was Week in Review.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, here is news in brief. The 70th session of the United Nations General Assembly, theme A Road Ahead for Peace, Security and Human Rights, ended on Saturday, New York time. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno Elmy Marsudi met with the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon at the United Nations headquarters, New York, on Friday, October 2, 2015. The delegates of the Solomon Islands at the United Nations headquarters on Saturday, New York time, noted that all countries have legal responsibility to uphold human rights and to take measures against human rights violations. The Indonesian government will set up Indonesian language teaching at schools in Papua New Guinea to show harmonious relations between the two countries. The economy of Central Java and Yogyakarta is predicted to grow 5.3% in the last two quarters of this year. Well, listener, that was the news in brief from the Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Voice of Indonesia can be heard daily through audio streaming at www.voi.co.id.
Listeners, you are still listening to RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia with English Bulletin Program. For feedback about the program, you can send us email to info@voi.co.id, info@voi.co.id, or english@voi.co.id, english@voi.co.id. You can also send a letter to PO Box 1157, Central Jakarta 10110, Indonesia. Listener, coming up next, Indonesian Wonder and Miscellany.
Let's listen to various information of Indonesian arts and culture in a daily segment of Indonesian Wonder.
This is RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Indonesian Wonder, a special segment introducing Indonesia's tourism potentials, including tourist destinations, art and culture, also culinary. Today, I'll invite you to sample a specialty of Madura Island, Nasi Serpang or Serpang Rice. So stay tuned. Besides via shortwave, you can also listen to this program via live streaming at www.voi.co.id. Nasi Serpang or Serpang Rice is one of the typical culinary of Bangkalan Madura Island. To be exact, it comes from a hamlet in the village of Sabian in Bangkalan district. The recipe came from the hands of a woman named Hajah Turah, who handed down Serpang Rice secret recipe to her 7 children. It is the 7 children of Hajah Turah who are now continuing the Serpang Rice culinary venture into some areas in the city of Bangkalan. Nasi Serpang, the original cuisine of Bangkalan, is actually almost the same as nasi campur or rice mix, which is commonly found in many areas in Indonesia in general. But Serpang rice, which has its own characteristics, Serpang rice seller has a pretty unique way to peddle their wares. They are easily found on the side streets of Bangkalan town, sold in baskets that line along the street plus a large umbrella as protection against the scorching sun. To make nasi serpang, you must use rice of best quality. So when eaten, accompanied by some side dishes, it will produce a great sensation. The side dishes are soun or fried vermicelli, spiced tuna, chunks of salted eggs, shellfish that has been flavored, chili paste plus coconut milk, sauce containing chunks of soft tofu, and fried cowhide crackers or krece. Then add peyek gurih, fried beef. It will produce a delicious savory taste on the tongue. Serpang rice is usually served on banana leaves as the plate. Usually, the sellers of Serpang rice open their wares from 6 a.m. until all stock is sold. Serpang rice is priced at 15,000 rupiah per pack. It can easily be found, but to get it, you have to be willing to get up early, because if during the day, guaranteed, it will be all sold out. If you happen to visit Madura Island, which is the closest island to Surabaya in East Jawa, take time to make a stop at Bangkalan to sample one of Bangkalan traditional culinary nasi serpang.
Miscellany on Indonesia, segment featuring various actual information.
Well, that was Indonesian Wonder today. I'm Anatri Jayakasih. This is RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with Miscellany, a regular segment featuring various aspects of Indonesia, including art and culture, customs and traditions, technology and environment, even lifestyle. Today's edition, we'll be discussing the World Animal Day. October the 4th is celebrated as World Animal Day. This began in Florence, Italy in 1931 at the Convention of Ecologists. On this date, the lives of all animals were valued. Various special events have also been planned at various locations around the world to appreciate animals. October the 4th was chosen as World Animal Day because it coincides with the feast of St. Francis of Assisi, a nature lover and patron of animals and the environment. Then the day of celebration is associated with the beast was a special celebration of the Christian religion. Currently, the celebration of World Animal Day is conducted by all animal lovers of all religions and beliefs, nationalities and backgrounds. Animals rescuers and wildlife organizations conduct fundraising activities, bazaar, and so on in schools and workplaces. On that day, they also provide an appreciation of the individual, group, or institution that is considered to have the best contribution to the world of animals. President Joko Widodo recently asked the zoo to have the function of education and wildlife conservation, not only as a recreational place. Speaking in a joint meeting of the board of the Association of Zoos throughout Indonesia at the State Palace, Jakarta recently, the president expressed the wish for the expansion of the zoo area so it can serve as a green open space of the city and contribute to the improvement of air quality as well as a water catchment area. Chairman of the association, Rahmat Shah, said the head of state also asked the board to propose what zoo not viable as a place of research, education, and rescue of the extinction and endangered species, as well as places of entertainment that educates at affordable prices to be repaired or built new. Rahmat Shah gave special attention to the development and progress of the management of the zoo. According to him, the number of visitors, which reached 10 million per year, shows that the zoo is still a favorite tourist spot. Previously, the association board reported to the president on the issue, especially the zoo for the conservation of flora and fauna. According to the association, some zoos that exist today still need to be improved, both physically and maintenance. He hoped the zoo follow ethics or rules determined nationally and internationally. The board notes out of the 52 zoos under the association, 10 to 15 are in poor conditions, 10 zoos are less good, the rest are still viable. On that occasion, also, the Indonesian endangered species were reported. International Union for Conservation of Nature called attention to Indonesian endangered animals such as rhinoceros, dwarf buffalo, anoa, and chirping birds. General Secretary of the Association, Tony Sumampau, said President Joko Widodo also asked the association to convey which species should take precedence and what priority activities to do. Henceforth, it would carry it out in accordance with the recommendation on the species rescuing steps. Well, that was Miss Leni today. Until the next edition with another interesting topic, I'm Anna Trijayakasi. Bye now.
We'll meet again tomorrow with another Miss Leni on Indonesia.
Hello, listener, wherever you are, welcome back to Listener's Mailbag, a weekly segment in which your letters and emails are acknowledged. In this segment, we'll also play some Indonesian music. Well, listener, we would like to thank you, our dear listeners, wherever you are, who have sent your letters or emails containing reception reports on our broadcast. Well, now let's start answering your letters or emails. First, I would like to read an email sent by Dietmar Wolf in Germany. He was listening to our broadcast in German language through frequency of 9525 kHz on September 20, 2015 at 1800 hours to 1900 hours UTC. And the SYN pole was 43333. Hello, Mr. Dietmar Wolf in Germany. Thank you very much for your email dated September 21st, 2015. We are also glad because our QSL card, which was sent to you, has arrived at your home. But unfortunately, the cap with RRE logo that you asked is not for sale. But don't worry, we'll ask to our management how to get it. Well, Mr. Dietmar Wolf, so keep always listening to our program and don't forget to send your reception report. Thank you very much. Listener, now we'll reply an email from Jarmo Hafukunas in Finland. He has sent his email to our station dated August 9, 2015. Hello, Mr. Jarmo Hafukunas. Thank you for your attention. We are really sorry that you have sent your letter 3 times, but we have never received it. And for this time, we have received your email. You make us amazed because you can write an email in Indonesian language and your language is very good. But we'll inform you that you have listened to RRI Wamena station. If you want to listen to our shortwave, you can tune in 9525 kHz or through our website www.vi.co.id. Hopefully, you will like our programs, which are presented in 6 foreign languages, namely in German, Spanish, Japanese, Arabic, Mandarin, and also English, as well as our national language, Bahasa Indonesia. And special for you, we will send our QSL card to your home. So please be patient to wait for it, okay? Thank you very much. And now we will play another beautiful song for our regular listener wherever you are. Enjoy the song.
Cintaku pasti takkan pernah. dalam cintaku.
Listener, now we'll continue to reply an email from Riaz Ahmad Khan in Pakistan. Hello, Mr. Riaz Ahmad Khan. How are you? We hope that you are tuning in our radio now. And you said that Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia is your favorite segment. And we believe someday you can write your email to our station by using Bahasa Indonesia. Well, Mr. Riaz Ahmad Khan, we are looking forward to receiving your next email. Thank you very much, and special for you and also our other regular listener, we will play a beautiful song. Let's check it out.
Yang tak bisa dijelaskan dengan kata. Seperti diriku yang tak pernah bisa hentikan segala cintaku padamu. Meskipun ku tahu luahkan luka, aku tak peduli. Coba untuk menata hatiku lagi, lupakan dirimu. Sungguh terasa menyiksa, ku tak berdaya. Aku tak peduli, sesungguhnya semua cinta. Biarlah menghiasi
listener, unfortunately, we have to sign off. We appreciate your reception reports on our broadcast. So please send your letters to Voice of Indonesia English Service, PO Box 1157, Jakarta 10110, Indonesia. I repeat again, Voice of Indonesia English Service, PO Box 1157, Jakarta 10110, Indonesia. Or you can also send your email to info@voi.co.id, info@voi.co.id, or to english@voi.co.id, english@voi.co.id. Don't forget to visit and also like our fan pages on Facebook, Voice of Indonesia, and also The Voice of Indonesia. Or you can also follow our Twitter @VoiIndonesia, @VoiIndonesia. You can also join our Instagram, voice_of_Indonesia. Well, listener, to conclude our listeners' mailbag for this week, we will play another Indonesian beautiful song. I'm Anya Sana. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet again next week in listeners' mailbag. Bye-bye.
Sendiri resapi heningnya malam ini, tanpamu di sini hatiku sunyi.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can also listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz, and 11785 kHz. Send your criticism and suggestions to en.voi.co.id or send your letter to Voice of Indonesia, RRI World Service, Jalan Medan Merdeka Barat, No. 4 and 5, Jakarta, or P.O. Box 1157, Jakarta 10011, Indonesia. And join us on Facebook, Voice of Indonesia, and Twitter, VoI Indonesia.